This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, February 25th, 2014. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
In about 7 minutes on Ozarks, a chapter ends for a bankrupt landfill in the Ozarks.
Later, the new president of the state's largest advertising agency talks to Roby Brock about his new post.
But first, on the first day of the 2014 filing period, Republican Asa Hutchinson filled out the paperwork yesterday to make it official.
Today, I have filed as a candidate for governor of Arkansas.
Hutchinson says his goals, if elected, would include economic development and job growth through education, tax reform, and efficiency in government. He also says he wants to stay out of the debate about the private option and not influence the discussion that's continuing in the legislature.
I do hope that they're able to conclude this quickly and urge them to resolve this. But I think the last thing they need me is to be holding a news conference and telling them what to do. Once they decide that, then my job is to take the decisions they make now and this governor makes and say, all right, this is what I want to do in 2015 when the pieces are there, looking at it from a budget standpoint.
This is Asa Hutchinson's second run for governor after losing to Mike Beebe in 2006. He's running against Little Rock businessman Curtis Coleman for the Republican nomination. Former Congressman Mike Ross is the only announced Democratic candidate. A spokesman for Ross says that he would file the necessary paperwork later this week.
As more observers outside Arkansas examine the state's unique plan of taking federal Medicaid money to buy private health insurance for poor Arkansans, Governor Mike Beebe is using the national stage to promote the program. Speaking to reporters yesterday at an event in Washington hosted by Kaiser Health News, the governor spoke of the consequences to the state if funding for the private option isn't passed in the legislature.
I think the more realistic possibility is severe and draconian budget cuts in some essential services is likely to be the result if it didn't pass. But by its very nature, I think that potential harsh remedy may be one of the reasons why Speaker Carter and perhaps others have more optimism about it passing, including me.
The governor says an $89 million deficit in his proposed budget would result if the legislature refuses to reauthorize the program. Renewing funding for the program was approved last week in the Arkansas Senate, but as of midday today, still has not been approved by the House.
Arkansas voters may get a chance to decide whether to raise the state's minimum wage if a petition drive under the name of Give Arkansas a Raise Now, or GARN, is successful. The petition drive kicked off this weekend with the support of U.S. Senator Mark Pryor. The Democrat, who is up for re-election this year, says he does not support President Obama's plan to raise the federal minimum wage from $7.25 to $10.10 an hour, but says he prefers the GARN plan to gradually raise the minimum wage to $8.50 by the beginning of 2017.
I think the Arkansas effort is a bottom-up effort. It's a grassroots effort. You're going to have a signature petition drive. You're going to have a vote of the people. If they voted in, they voted in. I suspect that they will.
Senator Pryor says this is an issue he expects to draw support from Arkansans of all political stripes because he says it's the right thing to do.
The four employees of the Arkansas Lieutenant Governor's Office have announced that they will voluntarily leave their posts by the end of the fiscal year. According to Talk Business Arkansas, the four staff members informed State Senate President Michael Lamoureux yesterday they would resign effective June 30th. The staff has a collective payroll of nearly $250,000, and some state lawmakers balked at the idea of paying the salary of the Lieutenant Governor's staff when there is no sitting Lieutenant Governor. Mark Darr resigned as Lieutenant Governor earlier this year amid state ethics violations.
Ozark Regional Transit will hold a public input forum tonight at the Fayetteville Public Library. Joel Gardner, Executive Director of ORT, says the main goal of the input session is to present proposed new routes and to get ideas from residents for where the transit authority could expand service to better serve the public.
Our current structure right now is we're providing service up and down the 71 corridor. We provide service east and west along the MLK corridor. But we're really going to reach out towards getting further south on 71 down to as far south as the county jail, providing services to the industrial area on the southeast corner, also connecting the city of Johnson to both Springdale and Fayetteville. So we've got ideas in our mind, but we want to make sure that they are the same ideas that the public wants.
The input session is from 5 until 7:30 tonight at the Fayetteville Public Library.
All four of Northwest Arkansas's largest cities reported lower February revenue numbers. February revenue represents taxes collected in December and remitted to the state in January. According to the CityWire, Fayetteville revenue at $1.7 million was down 2.4% from 1 year ago, while Rogers revenue of $1.4 million was a year-over-year decrease of nearly 4%. Meanwhile, Springdale reported revenue of $879,000, also a decrease of 4%. And Bentonville revenue was down by 4.6% with its reported $893,000 in revenue. Finance officials from all four cities cited snow and ice throughout December as a reason for less foot traffic and a decline in overall sales.
The city of Fayetteville is planning two prescribed burns at Lake Fayetteville. According to the city, the burns will aid in prairie restoration and create a favorable environment for native plants. The burns will be conducted in the coming weeks once weather conditions are suitable and the burn ban is lifted for Washington County. During the prescribed burns on Lake Fayetteville Dam, the paved and nature trails from Veterans Memorial Park to the marina will be closed. Likewise, while the burns are being conducted on 40 acres near Lakeview Drive, the trails from the Environmental Study Center north to the Botanical Gardens will be closed.
Tonight, cloudy with a 20% chance of snow, a low of 18, and a wind chill as low as 6 in northwest Arkansas. In the Arkansas River Valley, expect cloudy conditions with a 20% chance of rain and a low of 28. Sunny tomorrow with a high of 35 and a wind chill as low as 6 in northwest Arkansas and a high near 42 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, expect mostly clear skies with a low of 17 and a wind chill as low as 10 in northwest Arkansas and a low around 22 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. The six-county Ozark Mountain Solid Waste District filed for bankruptcy in January on a landfill and hauling franchise it purchased nearly 10 years ago in North Baxter County in north central Arkansas as a money-making venture. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, a state legislator has stepped forward to allocate special funding to safely close the trashed landfill.
Back in 2005, the Ozark Mountain Solid Waste District, comprised of Baxter, Boone, Marion, Newton, Carroll, and Searcy counties, purchased an old landfill and trash hauling business located on 700 acres northeast of Mountain Home for $8 million. Members aimed to have a centralized district landfill and get into the lucrative waste hauling business. They secured a $12.3 million loan in revenue bonds, municipal bonds at financing coming producing projects issued by the Bank of the Ozarks to improve and expand the landfill and for operating capital. District consultants estimated it would become a profit-making venture within 15 years. But then the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality soon ordered expensive upgrades as well as corrective action on waste cell overfills and leaks. Business tanked. The tipping fees per ton cost of trash dumping were too high to the point that even district cities and towns stopped hauling waste to the landfill. Plagued by debt and ADEQ citations, the district in the fall of 2012 voted to default, the first of its kind in Arkansas history. And a year later, the landfill, known as North Arkansas Board of Regional Sanitation, NABRS for short, closed. The Bank of the Ozarks, the bond trustee, is now asking for all its money back. Solid Waste District Board Chair Harrison Mayor Jeff Crockett.
Bankruptcy has been filed. The first bankruptcy hearing, I believe, happens in March, is when it's scheduled here in Harrison.
Mayor Crockett was not around when the NABRS landfill deal was struck and has wondered aloud to media about the risky venture. Still, he's done due diligence to fix the problem, trying to find a buyer or a manager to turn the business around to no avail. No one wants the liability, he says.
The initial landfill that was there from years and years ago that we bought was not built to current day standards and doesn't have liners underneath it. So there are issues with that leachate getting into the groundwater. So it needs permanent closure. It needs a cap over the top to keep that groundwater from sifting through it.
The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality filed a lawsuit against the district in early 2012 for $2 million to safely close the landfill. In an email for this report, ADEQ spokesperson Catherine Beninati said the bankruptcy court has allowed the lawsuit to continue, but the closure cost has since increased. A hearing on ADEQ's motion for summary judgment is scheduled for April 15th. In the meantime, district trash is being safely hauled out of the region and the defunct landfill is being tended to.
We have one employee on duty out there that makes sure that the leachate is being pumped, and he's still out there taking care of that. And we have a leachate contractor that's pumping that and hauling it to Springfield, Missouri. So we're trying to keep up with that as best we can until we run out of money, which is not going to be very long down the road. So
now this failed landfill lies in Johnny Key's proverbial backyard. He's Republican state senator from District 17 Mountain Home. Previous to that, he served as state representative. And previous to that, on the County Quorum Court. From the get, he doubted this transaction.
It became apparent to me late last year that this, you know, there was no viable option to keep the thing open.
So this fiscal legislative session, Keyes requested a $2 million appropriation from the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality Landfill Post-Closure Trust Fund, the first ask of its kind. Money for the fund is sourced from a $1 per ton fee on solid waste collected across the state. The fund, which holds $23 million, is meant to fix failing, filled, and closed landfills.
So the language that I proposed is very limited, and it's for a very short period of time, relatively speaking, 3 years, for closure and monitoring procedures that are necessary to take care of our situation up there. You know, that, as you know, that landfill is just miles from, one of the greatest lakes in Arkansas.
It could spread toxins into nearby Norfolk Lake, a source of regional drinking water. State Senator Key says ADEQ and the governor's office are supportive. His amendment, adopted by the Joint Budget Committee February 20th, is expected to be enacted for implementation July 1st.
We did include language there, this was at the request of the department, that would allow them to pursue recovery of those funds.
Meaning, while the appropriation does not pose a burden to taxpayers, it will eventually be felt by all solid waste customers across the district, imposed with an additional sanitation debt service fee to reimburse the post-closure trust fund. And District Board Chair and Harrison Mayor Jeff Crockett, who tends towards optimism, envisions a rather lovely outcome for the landfill.
Maybe turn it into a nature preserve and everybody wins.
Neighbors Public Park. Sounds really friendly. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
New quarterly meetings of the Fort Smith Board of Directors kicked off last night. The meetings are designed to be open forum brainstorming sessions to discuss any what and why questions the directors may have. A set of rules was established to govern the meetings, with items such as discussions should be honest and candid and ask anything. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with City Director and Vice Mayor Kevin Settle this morning to find out how last night's inaugural session turned out. Settle says the idea for the meetings came about during the board's annual retreat last summer to allow a free flow of conversation between the directors and the mayor.
Yes, in addition to our existing board meetings, our study sessions, our ward meetings that we do, we thought this would be an opportunity for us just to get together as a group with, you know, really nothing specific to talk about and kind of see if there's something that's on some directors' minds that could make the city better. So that's kind of what we did last night. We talked about how to improve our business-friendly atmosphere, how to make it easier to do business with the city and our planning and development departments. So we kind of focused on that area and talked about different ideas, just brainstormed on those ideas. And the administration had an opportunity to listen and sit, and took some notes, and then go back with those notes and try to work on things that we brought up that we've heard from the public and try to make our city more business-friendly.
So how does this differ from a typical board meeting?
Yeah, it's different because there's no voting, obviously. There's nothing that we're voting on. We're not really having any agenda. It's really just a kind of an open white sheet piece of paper and say, you know, what items do we need to talk about to make the city better? So instead of having an agenda with a regular items and you have a voting, this is kind of dinner and coffee talk is what we kind of started talking with and turned into brainstorming. But what you do around a dinner table, you know, when you talk to your family about things going on in the city, kind of the same atmosphere here is that the directors got around the table and had dinner and talked about things that would make the city better.
So can you talk about some of the specific ideas that that came up? I mean, you talked about business relationship with the city.
Yeah, what we did is we focused on how to, as city directors, how to make our planning and zoning better throughout the city. What items are we finding that are having issues? So, you know, we talked about our existing unified development ordinance. Is there something we can improve in that that make it easier for businesses to comply with our development ordinances? Is there certain items that we can do to make it easier so people can come to City Hall and walk through the process or even automate the process online using the web, our website to make the process even better? So, you know, and then ultimately, what data do we have that would help us streamline some of the issues? Are we seeing some issues that are the same issues day in and day out that we can focus on those issues to make the process even better? So, you know, looking at data-driven, looking at what issues we have, kind of looking at the broad scope of what citizen complaints are or contractor complaints are in the development services to make our city business-friendly and to help with the development in our city.
Is the hope that some of these ideas may come up for a vote?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think that one of the ideas we have is we're probably in the next 30 to 45 days, we'll have a resolution on the city becoming more business friendly and some of the actions that we will take to do that. If it's better customer service, you know, ideas that would make the city better. So that's going to come up to us in the next 30 to 45 days as a resolution that just tells the public, hey, we've heard we're going to try to make the city better and we're going to make it business friendly. So that's kind of where we're going from there.
And we're talking small business here.
Small business, large business, industrial, commercial, all types of business.
Everything. Well, so the big takeaway, it was successful.
It was successful. You know, we spent probably 80% of our time on focusing on that issue there, and it was good because it, you know, just gave us an opportunity to just not have to worry about having an agenda and focusing on what we think is some of the ideas. Another item that came up was railroad crossing public safety. How do we improve our railroad crossing areas to make it safer for the public? So, you know, so it was a broad range of scopes from business-friendly to public safety at railroad crossing. So you kind of got a flavor of different aspects that some directors wanted to talk about that would improve our city.
Is this something that's unique to Fort Smith?
I don't know if there's any other cities doing that. If they have, I haven't heard of. I know this is something that we kind of threw the idea out there and last summer and kind of put the plan together. And so every 3 months, we're going to have a brainstorm meeting. It can be about any subject we want to discuss.
Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with Fort Smith City Director and Vice Mayor Kevin Settle earlier this morning. In about 11 minutes on Ozarks, the fantastic Mr. Fox can do anything, it seems. And soon, he'll be in Bentonville.
It's just such a fun story. Roald Dahl just writes such fantastic characters that are so interesting. And the script itself has different puppets and things in it. So there's lots of opportunities for the young actors to do things other than just play a character. They get to be chicken puppets at some point that the fox is taking, and they get to play multiple characters. So that's really fun.
Trike Theater's latest production, plus an overview of the approaching month on stages all over the region. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
Though the United States took a stance of neutrality when World War I began, the German government quickly initiated a campaign of sabotage in the U.S. that included bombings of ships and factories, an anthrax attack, and a daring attempt on the life of J.P. Morgan. Howard Blum tells the story on the next Fresh Air. His book is Dark Invasion. Join us.
Listen this evening at 6 to KUAF 91.3 FM.
In 2011, Northwest Arkansas Community College received a $1 million federal grant to offer certifications and other classes to the unemployed in Northwest Arkansas. Now in its third year, the ARC grant program has already helped 275 area residents further develop their skills in order to more easily find a job. Stephen Hines, Director of Public Relations and Marketing at NWAC, stopped by the Carver Center for Public Radio last week to speak with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis about the program. At the start of their conversation, Hines said what makes the program unique is that it specifically targets unemployed and long-term unemployed area residents.
They also have to reside within a certain area, and they must meet qualifications in order to be enrolled in the classes, but then the classes are free and all supplies are free as well. It's an attempt to help them get education so that they can get jobs in specific areas.
Now, this is funded by a federal grant. That's how right. difficult was it to get that funding at NWAC?
Well, it's certainly something that our grants office was involved in, and they wrote the grant, and we were very hopeful that this was going to come through because of the fact, especially if you think about in 2011, how the economy was then, that we knew that there were so many students that could potentially take advantage of this, and people who simply were out of work, might have been out of work for a while, and wanted to further their education so that they could get a job in one of these areas.
So how has this program developed over the years since it started?
Mm-hmm. It's a program that it requires students to either reside in Northwest Arkansas, Southwest Missouri, or Northeast Oklahoma. They also have to apply, and it is a review process, so they must be approved for enrollment in the class. And the courses are things that would help people get a job in like computer service and repair, or disaster recovery, or network and mobile infrastructure. So because there is such a demand for that in our area, we have based the classes on what we think will help them get jobs, but also what the employers tell us they need in future employees.
So how do these courses offered, how do they compare to the courses offered during normal semesters?
Sure. These classes are not 16-week classes, so these classes start at very specific times. For instance, the first class in this will start on March the 3rd, and then it runs its own schedule. It's not based upon the spring semester, and it would be based on the calendar of that particular class. And then once the students complete that, hopefully they would be able to then get a job in that area. You know, they may be able to do computer repair work for a company, or perhaps they are interested in working in the field of disaster recovery, which is also a growing field.
So you mentioned a couple seconds ago that the courses in this program are based upon the demands of the area. Other than that, is there some kind of mindset involved in adding new courses to the program?
Well, we certainly do look at what employers in the area are telling us that they need, and we continue to hear that employers need people who are skilled in what you might think of as industry-type certifications. And so while it may not be a general college degree that you think of, it is something that many employers tell us they just can't find enough employees. And there are a number of jobs available in computer service, computer repair, networking, something that many of us rely on in our jobs every day, but you may not have thought about how do you actually get the training for that. And so based on the input and what we thought would be valuable to these people who are looking for jobs, then those are the courses that we developed.
So how successful has this program been?
Well, it's something that we certainly think has been successful, but we want it to grow more. We want more people to know about it. We want people to enroll in the courses, and we want them to have the opportunity to realize that even if they've been out of the workforce for a couple of years, but they're trying to get into it, maybe they need to think about a different area than in which they originally worked and consider these courses so that perhaps it does help them get a job in a new field.
Aside from providing training for getting people into a new field of work, is this a way to get people's foot into the door of college, going back to college?
It might. These courses are certainly taught in the evening, and so it does give them the opportunity to see what it's like to take evening classes. So even once they're in the working field again, they may think, well, I would still like to take a class in this area, or I would like to learn about this. And we do offer many night classes, and so it could very well give them the opportunity to consider what it would be like to take additional college courses.
Northwest Arkansas, it has the lowest unemployment rate of anywhere in Arkansas. What do you feel this program offers the region in that case?
Well, we've been hearing through so many different employers that there just is not enough training in the technical and career fields, that they wish there were more potential applicants who were skilled in career and technical, had certifications, were able to work in those fields. And so to me, it seems like it is a field with growing demand, and there just simply are not enough potential employees. So if people do enroll in these courses, the prospects of finding jobs should be good.
Is there anything similar to this being offered in the region?
To my knowledge, this is the only one that's being offered in the region. It is, again, part of this grant, which does run through 2015, and we hope that many people will take advantage of it.
You mentioned earlier mm-hmm. that you're looking to expand your reach for this program. Mm-hmm. Any particular areas?
Well, we really hope that anyone who meets the qualifications for this, again, anyone who resides in Northwest Arkansas, Southwest Missouri, or Northeast Oklahoma, is the residency qualification. And so anyone who may be listening to your program and in that area and is unemployed or underemployed, they should contact us to see if this is something that they wish to pursue.
Has there been a large response from people in Missouri and Oklahoma so far?
There has not been a large response. There are certainly students from Missouri and Oklahoma in it, but not to the level that we would hope.
Are there any other programs that NWAC offers to maybe help out the underemployed or unemployed get back into the workforce?
Well, there are many classes that we offer through our non-credit side of the college, what we call workforce development, which would allow someone who is out of the working field who maybe is interested in going into a new career path. And we have many courses that they could contact us and just enroll to take a couple classes because perhaps they were in a field where they were downsized, they lost their job, but they want to move into a new field, and we'd be happy to talk with them about that as well.
Have these programs been in large demand in the past few years as the economy has continued to turn around?
Well, that's the interesting thing. As you indicated, we have very low unemployment, but there are certainly people that are still having difficulty finding jobs. Part of it may be that there are a number of jobs out there, but they don't have the certification or the technical requirements to do that job. So if they enrolled and took these courses, then they might find that they could quickly find a job.
I know in the past few semesters, traditional enrollment has declined somewhat.
Yes, yes.
How does enrollment in these type of programs compare?
Yeah, our workforce development, specifically our contract training, is growing. That is something that many of our employers are using. So they have decided that their employees need more training. They need more education. They need more skills in certain areas. So the corporate training side of the college is growing at a very rapid pace. We're very pleased about that. We certainly would be interested in working with other employers in the area to meet their needs, but we are pleased that we have seen growth in that, and many employers are reaching out to us to offer courses to their employees.
Are there any types of courses that employers have asked you about that NWAC either doesn't currently offer or can't offer right now that you're looking at adding?
We are looking at adding some potentially in the career and technical fields as we look at our Washington County Center. We've been having focus groups. We have another one next week. And based on the feedback that we're getting there, we're especially looking into what type of career, technical, or even manufacturing courses employers are requesting. And we're considering what all would be involved if we were to offer those courses.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
That was Stephen Hines, Executive Director of Public Relations and Marketing for Northwest Arkansas Community College. He spoke with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis last week. To find registration forms, course schedules, or more information about the ARC grant program, you can visit nwacc.edu/webarcgrant.
It is Tuesday, February 25th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
One of my favorite art shows.
Oh, she
knows me well enough to guess.
I don't know, actually. I feel like I should know.
Celebrate art at the Art Center of the Ozarks.
Yes, I was like, Art Center of the Ozarks? It's not the 5x5.
Kid art.
Kid art.
Children in grades kindergarten through 8th grade. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing this, let's see, this is the 15th annual mm-hmm. Celebrate mm-hmm. Art Showcase. And it's so much fun. It's open to kids in Benton, Carroll, Madison, and Washington counties. And you get every medium you can think of, every topic you can think mm-hmm. of, from little kids drawing puppies to big three-dimensional, interesting sort of miniature installation things, and it's just fun. It opens March 5th, and you need to get it on your calendar so you can go and see what the kids are doing.
And there will be a reception from 1 to 3 o'clock on the 15th where awards will be presented.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Anne Swedecker-Heda.
It's the last week of February, and as the month is winding down, so too are a couple of local theater productions. Rogers Little Theater is wrapping up its production of Les Mis this week with performances scheduled for Thursday through Sunday. According to RLT's website, there are a limited number of general admission seats available for the remaining shows. So to check availability, please email manager@rogerslittletheater.net. The University of Arkansas Drama Department is also wrapping up its run of Spring Awakening this week. The next show is scheduled for 8 o'clock tomorrow evening. More performances are scheduled through Sunday. For details, visit drama.uark.edu.
There's still time to catch Theater Squared's latest production. The company will continue its run of the Tony Award-nominated play Good People until March 9th at Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville. More information is available at theater2.org. A number of young actors will be showcasing their talents during the next couple of weeks. The theater department at Bentonville High School has scheduled opening night for its production of The Crucible for Thursday night. Performances will take place through Sunday at Arend Arts Center. Showtimes and ticket information are available at bentonvillek12.org/arendarts.
Arts Live Theater is presenting Sideways Stories from Wayside School, March 13th through the 16th. The play is based on the book of the same name that follows the adventures of students attending a school whose 30 classrooms were built on top of each other instead of side by side. For more information, artslivetheater.com. The Young Actors Guild in Fort Smith will present The Cat in the Hat this weekend at King Opera House in Van Buren. Performances begin Thursday evening and run through Sunday afternoon. YAG will also host a free Seussical birthday party Saturday morning at the Van Buren Public Library. For more information, visit yagonline.org.
Trike Theater, another youth theater company in Northwest Arkansas, will be producing a couple of shows during the month of March. Performances of Romeo and Juliet are scheduled for March 6th through the 9th, and admission is $5. If you don't want to wait for that show, Trike Theater just happens to be putting on another production this weekend.
Yes,
grab your script.
Dig a dig. So, friends, since we still have stuff to block, we definitely still need our scripts. So make sure you grab your scripts and your pencils so you can write down your blocking, anything else you might need.
Friday night, Trike Theater, a professional youth company based in Bentonville, will kick off its weekend-long run of Fantastic Mr. Fox. Megan James has been with Trike Theater for about 2 years now, but this is the first show she is directing for the organization. The cast of 20 consists of children in 3rd through 9th grade who have been rehearsing 2 to 3 times a week since January. The play is based on the Roald Dahl book of the same name, and it's been adapted for the stage by David Wood.
It's just such a fun story. Roald Dahl just writes such fantastic characters that are so interesting. And the script itself has different puppets and things in it, so there's lots of opportunities for the young actors to do things other than just play a character. They get to be chicken puppets at some point that the fox is taking, and they get to play multiple characters, so that's really fun. And it just involves a lot of different movement and things like that that are really entertaining and good for the kids to try out.
The play follows the vain attempts of 3 farmers to get rid of a fox who regularly steals food from their farms. While the cast has been rehearsing at Trike Theater's office, which is located just off the Bentonville Square, the actual performances will take place at White Auditorium on Northwest Arkansas Community College's campus. To help prepare the young actors for the move to the White Auditorium stage, Megan and her team have taped the floor so the kids will have a better idea of what the NWAC stage will be like. She says the move may be a challenge, but it's good for the young actors to learn to adjust. For a lot of these actors, this will be their first theater experience. Megan says that's exciting, and she likes being that person who gets to guide them through that first experience. Because several of the children are novices, she says you have to take more time and teach them the basics of acting, which they may not know yet.
You have to think about how much they can process. So you don't want to overload them. And so rather than delving deep right now into objective and tactic and all these like big theater words that you learn as you get older, right now we're just really focusing on character work and how do you create a character. And with some of the older kids, maybe we'll do a bit more in-depth things, but you just have to really layer it on. So you start with the very basics, the blocking and the stage directions, and then you add the character stuff. And then if they're getting that, then you can add a little bit more. So it's just kind of being aware of where they are.
One of the things they discuss while preparing the young actors for a live performance is what to do in case a cast member forgets a line.
We definitely talk about that beforehand. We make sure that they are prepared. And those accidents will happen before we even get to opening night. So once they do happen, then we can talk about it. And, oh, well, maybe you should have made a different choice with that rather than shouting their line at them, you know, across the stage, which happens. But, you know, just we learn from our mistakes that we've done, that have happened during Tech Week. And I like to do other activities that talk to them about, we play a ball game that becomes more and more difficult as we go along, kind of like rehearsal does. It's easy at first, but then we add in all these other things. So I try to do other activities that can translate to performance.
This ball game involves the cast gathering in a circle and then tossing a squishy purple ball with jelly-like tentacles to one another. The actors must thank the person that threw them the ball before announcing the name of the person they're throwing the ball to next. This gets a little more complicated as the group tries to perform this task at a quicker pace.
Shelby, you ready? You ready, Miss Carla? Miss Megan, passing Olivia.
Thank you, Miss Megan. Olivia, passing AC.
Thank you, Olivia. AC, passing to Carly.
Thank you, AC. Carly, passing Emily.
Thank you, Carly.
Sean Patrick Barrett and Alexandria Meredith both attend Benton County School of the Arts and have worked with Trike Theater in the past. They hope to continue pursuing theater and are currently members of the Fantastic Mr. Fox cast. Alexandria is playing Mrs. Badger, the narrator of the story, and Sean is portraying Mr. Fox.
He's kind of goofy and just likes to make people laugh, but he'll do anything to make sure his friends and family are safe.
Because the play is based on a book, which was also adapted into a movie in 2009, the cast has references for what this production could look like. However, it's important for these actors to put their own spin on the show.
Some people have, like, if it's something that was made into a movie, then, like, if you've seen the movie, you kind of have trouble. But some separating those two characters. But some people, it's easier because it helps them tell the difference and not make it, like, a copy of that.
Sean's castmate, Alexandria, agrees.
Yeah, in a way, you really want to stick to the storyline so people can kind of connect it. But in another sense, you want to take the production in itself and add your own twist. So when people come, they're not like, yeah, I've already seen that. They'll find things that are different and interesting in the way that you have presented it to them.
Trike Theater will mount its production of Fantastic Mr. Fox this weekend, and director Megan James is looking forward to opening night.
Opening night is always the best. I get so nervous that I usually am just shaking and sweating, and like I feel like it's my children out there that I'm like, I just feel a lot of pride in them, I guess. But it's so much fun to see how they transform once they have an audience. Like that, whenever they get their first laugh or their first applause, that moment for them is so huge. And you can see their confidence grow and grow as they're performing. And it's just so exciting to see that.
Fantastic Mr. Fox will be on stage Friday through Sunday at White Auditorium, which is located inside Burns Hall on the Northwest Arkansas Community College campus in Bentonville. Show times are 6:30 p.m. Friday and at 2 o'clock Saturday and Sunday afternoon. Tickets are $8 for adults and $6 for children and seniors. Children under 2 years old will be admitted for free. For more information, you can visit Trike Theater, that's theater with an R-E, .org.
Welcome, diggers, all to Fox's Feast.
Then can we all cheer at that?
Yay!
Yay!
A toast. Let us drink
a toast to our dear friend who has saved our lives this day, Mr. Fox.
This is Ozarks at Large. What has 24 voices, a Grammy Award, and will be at Walton Arts Center next month? The answer, the Soweto Gospel Choir. The choir will be on stage March 6th, and in about 10 minutes, We'll ask a question that could earn you 2 free tickets to that performance. That's in about 10 minutes on Ozarks at Large. The Red Cross has been offering first aid and CPR certification courses for decades. The agency also provides pamphlets, books, and an app for smartphones with basic first aid information. Now the Red Cross is extending expertise to pet owners. Ozarks at Large's Emily Gallahan has this report on a new service the Red Cross launched earlier this year.
Sometimes having a pet can seem like a daily struggle. A lot of the worries pet owners have every day are health-related. Like, did my dog just eat enough chocolate to hurt him? Or can my cat's ear infection wait? Well, now there's an app for that. The Pet First Aid application from Red Cross is made for smartphone users with pets. It has a section for both dogs and cats, and even lets you build a profile for your pet specifically. Red Cross communications specialist Rick Harvey says the app is useful for all pet owners.
There's a time that your animal is going to get sick, but what if your pet has some symptoms that you're not familiar with? You need to know what to do. You need to know what signs to look for to know, okay, can this wait till the next morning when my vet is open, or do I need to drive the extra 20 miles to the animal hospital to get them looked at immediately?
If you think you know how to treat your pet in emergency situations, there may be some you haven't even thought of. For example, if you exercise with your dog, how can you tell if it's dehydrated or if its heart rate is too fast? It might be important to find that information quickly and simply. Rick says this was an important app for the Red Cross to create because of people's love for their pets and because there are so many. Nearly 50% of households in Northwest Arkansas have pets. And for the outdoor ones among them, the unpredictable winter weather we've been having can be an issue.
If it's too cold for you to be outside, then it's too cold for your pet to be outside, and when to bring them in. And this app will teach you warning signs to look for if your dog or your cat could possibly get hypothermia, and then what to do.
The app can help you find vets or animal hospitals nearby, along with their phone numbers, addresses, and hours, which can be useful even for animals that are already committed to a clinic.
Let's say you're taking a road trip to Florida to go to the beach. And let's say something happens and you're halfway there and your dog is not doing well. You can use your phone and find out where's the closest vet, where's the closest animal hospital to where you are at that particular moment.
And if you need a place to stay on your trip, the app can find which hotels are pet friendly. It even has information on what can be done with lost or found pets, including links to websites where that information is frequently posted. One way Red Cross is spreading the word is through animal shelters, who encourage anyone adopting dogs, like these you hear at the Fayetteville Animal Shelter, to download the app for reference. Through the Pet First Aid app, the Red Cross is also hoping to help in cases of natural disasters.
You know, history shows that people that have not evacuated during disasters because they didn't want to leave their pets behind. Well, this Red Cross app contains resources to help owners include pets in their emergency action plans.
Along with being helpful for your pet, the app can also be fun for you, with interactive quizzes where you can earn badges and a storytelling section for you to share how it's helped your animal. It's available in the Apple or Android App Store for 99 cents. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Emily Gallahan.
Cranford, Johnson, Robinson & Woods is Arkansas's largest advertising, marketing, and public relations firm. CJRW is Little Rock-based, but has a strong presence in Northwest Arkansas, and now the president of the company is based here. The agency has tapped Darren Gray for the post, while Wayne Woods will remain the chair and CEO of the agency. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas recently talked to both Woods and Gray about the change at the top of CJRW.
Where and how did this discussion begin to recruit Darren Gray, former publisher of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, to the CJRW?
Roby, Darren and I have been friends for 20, 25 years, you know, and we just got to talking one day and we played the what if game, and then really a few months ago we really started talking serious, and he was thinking about he wanted to do something else in his life, and I knew we needed some leadership, some good leadership at the agency, someone who was very well respected in New Northwest Arkansas, someone who knew how to lead. There was a leader he knew had to be a multifaceted businessman, mm-hmm. and who also had contacts statewide, and also who thought similar to my brother and I and the rest of our company. And we're so much alike that we think alike and about family and God and, you know, wives and business. And it just, excuse the pun, it was a natural.
Yeah. All right. The natural state there. Great play on words there. And Darren, your last name is not Woods, but you might have to adopt that as your new last name, the way Wayne's talking about you here. Tell me what you bring to the table. Your background is predominantly in print media, but the world's going digital. You obviously have a background in the parks and tourism industry as well, which is important for CJRW. But tell me what you think you bring to the table here.
You bet, Roby. You know, over the last almost decade, especially being in the publishing business, we've certainly had to adopt social media, electronic, interactive type of media coverage and with all of our publications, taking our own company and our own products and taking them to digital and online and email blast. You know, the reality is, Roby, is all these companies are all in the same boat, and that is, you know, we're still delivering content, we're still delivering our messages, but how we do that nowadays is so much different than what we used to. And because people are living longer, most of us are serving generations beyond what we ever imagined. So within the scope of our clientele, we may have some that want print only, and we certainly have some that want digital only. Most of us are somewhere in between. And so over time, what we've become, it's a term I like to use, is format agnostic, which means we have to present our content and our message in many multiple formats, and then deciding or depending on the consumer, they're going to choose which way they read and consume that information. So it's not only in the media business, but it's all companies, and the strategy is still the same even though the technology is different. Is you have to understand where your clients are, where your customers live, and then reach out in multifacets, and then they're going to consume that information depending on their own preferences and how they like to read their information.
Yeah, the analogy that I like to use a lot is banking. How do you want to bank? You want to internet bank. Yeah. You want to go to an ATM, go through the drive-through window. It all kind of works. Yeah. Wayne, let me come to you with a different question here. Bringing in someone from the outside can be dangerous for companies, particularly well-established companies. You've got risks in terms of making sure somebody does fit in with a corporate culture and a group of people that have been working together for years. What makes Darren just such a natural fit in the CJRW mold?
Well, I mean, he thinks like we do, and he's so well respected, you know, in the business communities across Arkansas. You know, we saw some great opportunities in Northwest Arkansas. Mm-hmm. You know, Darren is the president of CJRW, not just in Northwest Arkansas, but the entire state. Like, I'm the CEO of our company for the entire state. So, you know, we just had so many things that were similar, and the more we talked, the more I realized that he was the one guy that we were looking for. And we had a couple other candidates out there, but I always wanted Darren. And once my brother got on the wagon with him, then it was, you know, we our executive committee voted unanimously for him. So did our board of directors. I think today and yesterday he got 600 emails congratulating him. Okay. So I got 150 on my little old phone. So, you know, I mean, we're looking for big things, and you know, he's part of our future. We've got a great group of people that work here in Little Rock and in Northwest Arkansas. You know, we deal with some big corporations up there, very demanding, mm-hmm. very competitive. You know, you're only as good as the people you work with, and I think that's one of the reasons also Darren joined us, is that he saw the quality of people that we have, and, you know, we know our stuff in some areas. We really do. And I'm proud of that fact, you know.
Darren, let's come to you on this part of the equation as well, too. Wayne's talked a lot about the growth and the potential for Northwest Arkansas. I will underscore, he says you're the statewide president there. But tell me what you being rooted in Northwest Arkansas, what do you see needs to happen for Cranford, Johnson, Robinson, Woods in Northwest Arkansas? What do you hope to develop up there?
Well, I think it's like any other company. Certainly in Northwest Arkansas, we have such a diverse economic industry sector. So you've got everything from the big companies up here to the vendors that serve them, down to the local mom and pop shops. And so what you have to be nowadays is be able to answer and respond to any of those types of companies and industry sectors. And I'll kind of back up something that Wayne said, was that, you know, within the organization that's already there, they have such a diverse group of expertise and backgrounds, and so there are people that are specifically associated and understanding of consumer product goods companies and retailing and tourism and manufacturing and new technology. And so the diversification of the company has to match the diversification of the region that you're trying to serve. And so I think the opportunities in Northwest Arkansas is maybe in the past that they've served maybe a smaller group of clients, although somewhat diverse, but you know, part of my goal and objective now is to spread that out and become a lot more diversified in Northwest Arkansas.
Roby Brock with our content partner Talk Business Arkansas spoke with Wayne Woods and Darren Gray, the CEO and president, respectively, of Cranford, Johnson, Robinson, and Woods. Gray was recently named president of CJRW, the state's largest advertising, marketing, and public relations firm.
Support for Talk Business on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, we talk with tough-on-crime police commissioner Bill Bratton as he takes charge of the NYPD for the second time in his career. What does he learn from his experience in combating crime in the nation's largest cities? That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now can be heard this afternoon from 1 to 3 on 91.3 FM.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Garfield.
Garfield, just almost to Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Time to give away a couple of tickets to the Soweto Gospel Choir performance at Walton Arts Center.
That's next week.
March 6th.
Okay.
So is that Thursday? Yeah. So this is a Grammy Award-winning choir,
uh-huh,
formed about 10 years ago, won the Grammy in 2007 for their CD titled Blessed.
Hmm.
And they are from Soweto, which is now part of the city of Johannesburg, South Africa.
Okay.
Now, South Africa is the fifth, by population, if you rank by population, is the fifth largest country in Africa.
Uh-huh.
Not by size, but by population.
Sure.
So, here's how you can earn yourself two free tickets to see the Soweto Gospel Choir at Walton Arts Center March 6th. Just email us what country in Africa has the largest population.
Okay. And you can email us at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. If you don't know the answer, I have a feeling you can probably Google it.
I would assume so, yes.
I assume you didn't just randomly know it. You had to look it up.
Actually, if I had been forced to guess,
sure,
like I'm forcing other people to guess,
yes,
I would have been wrong.
Okay.
And by a great...
But you have done your research,
oh,
and
yes,
you have,
yes, yes,
the,
yes,
correct answer.
Yes.
You didn't just make it up.
No, no.
Okay.
I'm not just assuming.
So our listeners can research and find the answer,
yes,
if they don't know it.
And the gap between 1 and 2 in population in Africa is significant. So it's not like you're going to go, oh, well, it could be, it might be.
Okay.
It's
so you're looking
gap
for...
the most populated country in Africa.
Okay. Email us at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com, and we'll give the tickets away tomorrow.
That's right. And later... this week we have some tickets for Roseanne Cash as well. So stay tuned. Do anything interesting this weekend?
Lots of random things here and there. So yeah, I did the Ale Trail. So I have my passport and I need to go turn that in for my sticker.
Very good.
Went to Soup Sunday. Ate lots of, you know, lots of soups, lots of beers. I did a lot of eating apparently.
Not a bad weekend.
Not a bad weekend.
Not a bad weekend at all. You'll be with Christina Thomas tomorrow.
I will.
For Ozarks at Large. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Yasmin Akerheda.
Thanks so much for listening.